right, everybody, welcome back to The Takedown. I'm your host, Dr. Nick Greiner. I'm very excited to be here today. I've been, had this podcast going now for a few months, and mostly the talk has been about nutrition and health stuff. And we're going to stay on that topic today, but we got a lot of stuff to talk about. You know him on Twitter as MurphActual1, I believe. Is that correct, sir?
You got it, brother.
All right. So I tell you what, I know we follow each other on Twitter, and we have a lot of the same people that we follow and follow us. So getting started, Murph, if you wouldn't mind, my friend, kind of let everybody know, the listeners, a little bit about yourself, kind of your story, and then we'll kind of go from there.
Yeah, man, absolutely. And it's a pleasure to be on, just so you know, an honor as well. And like you said, so eloquently, we do follow some of the same people, vice versa. And there's a reason for that. Like I always say, you've seen it before, iron sharpens iron, and there's no coincidence by that sort of thing. So,
amen.
Yeah. So my background, so I've got a, just from a, I guess, qualification, education perspective, I have a Bachelor of Science in Quantitative Economics from the Naval Academy. I've got an MBA from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and I've got an Executive Leadership Certificate from Harvard Business School. So I guess I'm an educated person, but at the same time, I'm a worldly person that has mostly relied on experience and instinct and my gut more than anything else. I, of course, nice to have the education behind you, but it's more importantly to have the situational awareness and the common sense behind you as well too. So
100%. And I think that for our Twitter interactions, because I think that you are somebody that I interact with most on Twitter, and I think that what you just said is very important, right? from an education standpoint, I guess what part of life that you're looking at, I guess maybe if it's health and fitness or nutrition, or like you mentioned, like real world awareness stuff, and I want to get into some of that. You obviously, in my opinion, it's important. And I kind of struggle with this sometimes too, because I have a 5-year-old and, I have lots of schooling and education, but I think about my 5-year-old and the way that the world is now, I pray sometimes that he's like, he tells me, hey dad, I want to be an electrician, or I want to be a plumber, formal education is good. I think there are some downfalls, right, to it, but, like you said, having this, awareness, or I guess a realization, a funny story. I was having a conversation with somebody, maybe it was last week, and they were talking about the idea of trust, right? And how mm-hmm. some people have this worldview that people are generally good, and if you are nice to people, that means that everybody's going to be nice to you back. And we obviously know that that's not true. So what are your thoughts on that, Murphy? Sure. We have this, and I don't, from a perspective of me, I believe in God and Jesus. So the Bible will tell us that no man is good, if we're comparing ourselves to God, right? So no man is good, but you can be a genuine person. You could be trustworthy. But what's this? What are your thoughts on the idea that if you're just nice to everybody, that everybody's going to be nice to you back?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's sunk cost fallacy. I mean, I think that a lot of people buy into that and they think that. But here's the thing with that. I think it's like Ronald Reagan used to say, trust but verify. So, it's all good to be nice to people and it's good to have that heart-centered approach. But it's also extremely important, especially these days, to have the situational awareness and have the intellect and the attuneness to understand how to read gut reaction. So what I'd recommend is there's a really good book out there called Left of Bang that talks a lot about situational awareness and reading your gut and why that's so important. And to your point, I've got 2 daughters. So my world is really different these days with social media, with the pressures. My oldest is 16 and a half, has her license, has her car, and has her first boyfriend. So you can imagine how these first conversations have gone between me and him so far. And my youngest is 12. Totally different ball game. She's into volleyball. She's into sports. She's a standout athlete. My oldest daughter, not so much. And so one of the things I told her recently about this, about trusting people, because she's a very heart-centered person. She's very attuned. She's a very sweet, sweet girl, no doubt. And that's good and bad. And so one of the things I told her is with curiosity resides courage. And what I mean by that is when you're with him or with anybody, ask questions. Ask where you're going. What are we going to do? Who's going to be there? When are we coming home? How are we getting there? I said, that sort of thing, if someone has bad ideas or bad intentions, that's going to immediately put them on guard and they're going to be scared, because now you're asking questions. You want to know what's happening.
Right.
And I said, so, you know, life's all about boundaries and it's all about experiences. And, you know, some of the things I've seen and looked at and scenarios I've been in have taught me that that is absolutely true. You know, you've got to trust your gut and you've got to be aware of what's going on around you and never be afraid to ask questions.
Absolutely. That's huge. And I think, you know, when I was growing up, you know, it's funny, when I was growing up, I have a younger sister, and my mother, I remember whenever I was, my buddies were coming to pick us up or to go somewhere, you know, movie, to the mall, my mother, she would say, because for about the first half of my life, my biological father wasn't around. And there's lots of reasons for that. Now my relationship with my dad is really, really good, but it wasn't for a while. But I had a lot of good fatherly figures, and I was very close with my grandfather, my mother's father, my mother's two brothers. We lived with my grandparents for a while. So I had a lot of good male, you know, father figures in my life. But my mother would always say that, you know, ask those questions, where are you going? And back then I thought that she was nuts, you know, but she always taught that to my sister.
Right.
You know, what do you know when you're a kid, right? And, but that's very important. And I think that maybe, I guess, that mindset for at least me, transitioning into being aware, but also to obviously I want to chat jujitsu with you as well, because that's kind of like, you know, our passion. But you know, yeah, it's like every other tweet we're posting Machado, the shark meme. Machado said that.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm like saying that it's awesome.
It's true.
So, yeah, it is so true. But I feel like, you know, as far, you know, so you have this awareness, right? And so I'll tell you what, let's get into some combat stuff. So me personally, yeah. I do not, I only do Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. I have never trained any striking. So give me your thoughts on combat kind of, and I know I've heard people like Joe Rogan and Jocko ask these questions.
Yeah.
If we're talking about combat, what do you like the best, and what do you think are the best options?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. And I talked to Jocko quite a bit, know him pretty well. So it's kind of funny you would bring him up. But what I will tell you is, you know, I think it's all about you stack advantages, you know, in whichever way you can do that. So it can be multi-purpose. And it's like what, you know, Jocko and I've said before, it's good to be a Swiss Army knife. You know, it's good to have multiple things. I think jiu-jitsu is a fantastic base and an excellent skill. And that's something you and I share. And I agree with that wholeheartedly. What I will say is when I was growing up, one of my stepbrothers was a standout boxer. He ended up being, you know, in the Junior Olympics, Golden Gloves, 139 pound champion, all that stuff. Trained with Sweepy Whitaker, trained with Meldrick Taylor, Evander Holyfield, all those dudes. So I would train with him. And it was funny. We would go to Mexico and fight on that circuit, you know, like me and him and his trainer. And I can't tell you how much I learned just in striking in that respect. Just boxing was amazing because it taught you so much about eye-hand coordination, reflexes, and reading people. Mm-hmm. And so for me, I think that's a really good skill. But more importantly, I think what I've come to value jiu-jitsu most for is it's not about the raw power, because with boxing, it is all about finding that knockout punch or wearing somebody down with a bunch of rabbit punches. You know, go to the body, go to the head. That's what it is. 1-2, 1-2, 1-2. Jiu-jitsu is a whole different ballgame. You know that. It's all about you're going to use them against them. You're going to go heavy on them, and you're going to wear them out ultimately. And the whole goal is to not get super physical, but to de-escalate that before it becomes that way. Right. So, you know, funny story. When I was going through my belt ceremony last weekend, Hoist was in town for it. You got to go through Hoist to get to your belt. And so I'm rolling with him and going through things. And I'm chill, you know, completely relaxed, but he's more relaxed than anybody I've ever seen or been with. And I've rolled with Jocko, I've rolled with Joe, I've rolled with, you know, Pete from Origin, all those people, Echo, all those people, and they're super chill too, but Hoist is beyond chill. I mean, I thought he was dead a couple times. And so I thought I was getting in on him, like, all right, you know, I'm hanging with him. This is awesome, you know, and he's barely sweating. I'm sweating hard, you know, because I sweat hard anyway. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to stay chill. And I'm with him for about 5-6 minutes. And I'm avoiding everything. I'm throwing stuff at him. He's reading everything. And all of a sudden, he just smiles at me and throws me in a loop choke. Game over. I've never seen a loop choke. I don't. People around me were like, "Dude, I've never seen him throw a loop. That's crazy." I was like, "I could have never predicted a fucking loop." I mean, a loop joke was like out of nowhere. So right then, I was like, "You know what? I always knew that you never stopped learning in jiu-jitsu." And my trainer, who's awesome, has always said, "There's like 28 moves in jiu-jitsu, ultimately. But what you do is you're learning those 28 moves like 10 different ways each way, for each one." And so. Anyway, so that's why I feel like, you know, with jiu-jitsu, I like the philosophy behind it, you know, beyond what it does and what it teaches you. So for me, I think it's good to have that as your base. And I think it's also good to know how to strike, because there are sometimes that's the only way you can close distance.
Right.
Or create distance, you know, is to be able to throw a strike and or even a kick, you know, and create that distance you need to do whatever you need to do to make another decision.
Right. Yeah, I know.
That's my thought.
Yeah, my professor, he's a Brazilian guy. He's been in the United States for probably maybe 15, 20 years. And he has a boxing background as well. And around where I'm at, Murph, there's a couple of places more down in Pittsburgh. I'm a little bit north of Pittsburgh, PA, just barely north. But schedule-wise, you know, with jiu-jitsu, and for me, it just with my schedule and things just work out better where I can get to my academy most often. But I'm going to start incorporating more and more of that into striking into my game. But for me, I know back in it was 2006, I believe. There was a BJJ, or excuse me, it was a MMA school. I was living in Atlanta at the time, and there was an MMA school a little bit west of where I was at. And they had BJ. One of the things they offered was BJJ, excuse me. And I was there. I started there, and I was there for about a year and a half. And then I got done with school, and then I moved to Naples, Florida, for a little while. Worked in the clinic down there. Then I finally moved back home, opened up my clinic. And then I took a little bit of break. I took some years off, and I've been back in it now for some time. But for me, I got to tell you, man, I think more than anything, and people will ask me it's funny when somebody that doesn't do jiu-jitsu, when they ask you what you like about it, it's like you can tell them a million things, but it's almost like, well, they'll ask me, is it the exercise? You know, is it because you know, it's hard? And I think it's the mental too. I think more than anything, it's the mental game. It's the chess match, right? You know, and there's a guy.
Yeah, it's human chess.
It's chess. And there's a guy at our academy. His name is Chris. He's a freaking beast, dude. Brown belt. And it's like, he's an animal. And he's just like, I was rolling with him on last Thursday, and same thing, man. You know what I mean? It's this game, and then he threw something on me, and it's just like my professor always says, like, the difference between a black belt and a white belt is the black belt got 20 layers. You know what I mean?
That's right.
Belt got 20 layers, and the white belt has half a layer. You know, so it's I think for me. It is the mental game, and it's the camaraderie. You know, I consider my teammates, because I used to compete. I don't anymore.
Right.
I think my teammates of them as like brothers and sisters, man. I really do. You know, because you quite literally, you bleed and sweat on each other and each other's eyes and mouths and stuff like that. Which, as an aside, Murph, you know what's funny? I guess we can maybe switch gears into the COVID situation. You know, you know my thoughts on that, right? No, I'm not quiet about that stuff on Twitter.
I'm not either. I mean, one thing I'll tell you before you transition to that, I'm just going to make one more point about jiu-jitsu that was, I think, really important to me, or has been important to me in terms of summing it up. My instructor he's a great dude. His background's insane, and he's got, I think, every part of his body tatted up. I think I showed you that skull tattoo he's got on the back of his head. He's had an interesting life, but he trains the special forces dudes. It's what he's been doing for years. That's his specialty, on techniques. But he also was a judo competitor, a world-class judo competitor, BJJ competitor, all that. But I remember him telling me one day, we were just talking, he's like, listen, people that want to come here and train to actually, you know, compete and fight, that's not what I do. He's like, I'll do that on the side for him. But what I teach you in here is real-world stuff that'll save your life. He said, the biggest thing to me is, he said, I remember I'd be on stage getting trophies and medals and winning competitions, and it was awesome. He said, but the biggest thing that ever hit me was when I had guys come back from deployment and tell me what I taught them saved their life. It's like, that's when I realized that's what it's all about. And so to your point, that's like one of the biggest things about jiu-jitsu in my mind is that it's not about, you know, being able to strike somebody and knock them out in one blow or choke them out, because that's going to happen. Like he said, right. You're always going to meet the wizard, you know, right. Getting choked out. It's just a matter of how, when that's going to happen. So I just thought I'd mention that as like, you know, a good departing shot about, you know, the value of that skill and that technique.
100%. I always say that, you know, the best way to not be a bully and to not be bullied is to know how to fight, you know? And exactly. I think that a lot of the guys and gals that I know that I train with, I mean, I would say all of them are the most humble people that I know, you know, these are killers, you know?
Totally.
So yeah,
totally,
I agree.
Yeah.
Wholeheartedly.
Yeah. Yeah. If you ever listened to Harvey Flanagan from the Cro-Magnons, that's the black belt jiu-jitsu in New York, I've rolled in his studio. That dude's awesome. He said that many times that it's amazing how many fights you don't get in when you're skilled in a practice such as jiu-jitsu. You just don't need them. You know, you just de-escalate.
So, absolutely. Yeah.
There you go.
I guess what I was alluding to a moment ago with the, you know, what's going on with all this stuff. Share a funny story, and I'll get your thoughts on everything too. Funny story, a guy that I trained with. So when at the genesis of all this, whenever it was back in March, our academy closed maybe for about a month, I think, maybe a little bit longer than that.
Yep.
But I had a couple of buddies I was meeting with, you know, at my place and at their place. We were training. We never stopped training.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, when the academy
fight club, basically.
Right. Well, the academy's been open back up now for some time, and we're going back. And so the classes are the classes that we had before, they're all available. And the Sunday class is dedicated, it's no gi. So we train throughout the week, it's mostly gi, but Sundays mm-hmm. it's a no gi class. You know, we do a lot of stand up there. And what's funny is there's a guy that we train with who I would consider to be a germaphobe, right? Which is kind of odd if you practice jiu-jitsu to be a germaphobe, right?
But, very, very odd.
Yeah, but and what's funny is that you know, before we warm up, he's got the Purell all over him. After we warm up, he's putting the Purell on. After we drill, before we roll, after we roll, and we kind of give him a hard time about
and
it.
And ringworm's no joke either.
No. Right.
But go ahead.
Yeah, you're exactly right. But and we kind of busted chops about it, right? And he's a brown buddy, he's a beast, another beast, and we kind of busted chops about it. But nobody really cares, right? Nobody really cares. But right. What I would find interesting is if one day we all walked into the academy, and he started asking us to all lather up in Purell, and then that's where I would have a problem. So I guess my point here I'm making is, You know my feelings on the situation with what's going on in the world. And I was talking to somebody recently, you know, how we have recent history, you know, 2009 with H1N1, you know, where was the call for shutdowns and masking up and all this and that stuff? So I don't know, Murph, you know, what do you, you know, how much of a road or a rabbit hole do you want to go down with this? What are your thoughts, brother?
Yeah, I mean, I'm with you on that. And it is a rabbit hole, like you said, because there's so many prongs to it. It's multidimensional. So in my opinion, you got to follow the politics in this too. That can't be devoid of all this. There's definitely some political undertone to this, no doubt. I'm not saying that it's not a contagious disease. We all know it is. I'm not a doctor at all, but I can tell you, it's like anything else, flu, whatever, all of it's contagious. But
right.
I think it's been a hyper reaction to a problem that, in my opinion, the end result is where we're trying to go with it, which is to avoid an in-person election. That's just, you know, pretty plain and simple in my opinion. But what I will tell you is you're right. I mean, I think that it's teaching a lot of lessons though. It's teaching, there's some good and bad. It's teaching things around value and what's most important in life. I think people have done a reassessment and a self-assessment of, do I really need this or, you know, this particular thing in my life? If it turns out I got away from it for this long, and maybe that's a good thing. So it's taught people how to do that and maybe do a self-assessment, which is good. But on the flip side, it's also taught some people that weren't so strong mentally to deal with things like this and being shut in to have to deal with their problems that they really don't, they're not equipped to handle that. Right. So that's another thing. And then I think the other part of it is it's shown vulnerability where there's people out there that really have not ever known how to take care or protect themselves in the event of shit going south. And now they're seeing that shit is going south. A lot of people are scared and they don't know how to protect themselves or their families. So, you know, an outcrop of this stuff has been the rioting that you've seen, the protesting, the mob mentality. So people are really starting to try to figure out and see and understand, how do they deal with that? How do they protect themselves? How do they do that without being a vigilante?
Right.
You know, the McCluskeys that you've seen on TV that, you know, are so famously advertised for coming out and defending their property. I'm not saying everything they did in that video was right, because they made a lot of mistakes.
Yeah.
But their intent was what it was, which was to protect themselves, which right. is a right. Second Amendment right.
Yeah.
And I find myself in a situation with a lot of people that have, I can't tell you how many, you know, friends, neighbors, accomplices, whatever, will come to me and say, hey, looking to buy the wife a gun and get her trained up. Looking to do that for myself. What do you suggest? What do you recommend? How do I do it? So I like the fact that people are inquisitive, but more importantly, I like the fact they're looking to do it the right way.
Right.
So I'm seeing a huge uptick with that. You know, so that's kind of just really at a 30,000 foot, how I see this COVID thing. There's a whole lot more there. Like you said, we could probably make this a 25 part series
right.
to go over COVID.
Right.
But in a nutshell, those are some of the things that I'm seeing. But I think most people that are strong minded and have training already, they're realizing that this is exactly what you train for. Shit's going to hit the fan.
Right.
You just have to be ready for it. You have to be equipped, and you have to not be scared and petrified and paralyzed by not taking action.
Right.
That's the difference.
Yes. 100%. Yes. And I think that's a very, very great point that you made, Murph, about all that. You know, there's obviously things in life that you have no control over. And I guess I can use an example for, I was on a few weeks ago on the Low Carb MD podcast with Tro and Brian, and we were talking about this, but from a health standpoint, you know, the idea of there are certain things that we can do that we have control over with our own health. You know, we can choose to exercise in some form or fashion, choose to put the good foods in our mouth as opposed to the wrong ones more times than not. And you know me, I love my Reese's cups and bourbon, man. Right.
Man, I was going to say that's bourbon, but Reese's cups are literally my kryptonite nearly.
And yeah.
Bourbon's as close. Bourbon's right there next to it.
Yeah.
But so, the two shall never be mixed. I have seen
right,
like
right,
a,
right, right.
A peanut yeah. butter bourbon. That's not going to happen. I've
no,
seen
no.
It. That's never happened.
Yeah. So, you know, so, and then, you know, getting good sunlight and, you know, all these things, good sleep. So there are things obviously that we can do for ourselves that we can control, but there's obviously a lot of things that we cannot control. And I think, like you said, is that being prepared. It's, you know, I always tell my wife, I said, the things that I do in my life or that we do, you know, whether it's firearm training, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, investing in myself or us is only because you just want to be prepared and praying that you never have to know how to do, or excuse me, praying that you never need to do anything about it, you know what I mean? And I yeah. think from a perspective of what, like what you said, this mob mentality, man, I see some of these videos where, if I could be honest with you, man, I consider myself to be a pretty even keeled dude across the board, but I see some of these videos of what people are doing to other people, and I can't lie that I think to myself, like, my goodness, man, like, what, like, if I were, I often think to myself, if I were out with my family, you know what I mean? I think to myself, what yeah. I just, that's why I honestly, Murph, I go from my house to my clinic to jujitsu and to see my mother and my sister. That's pretty much my life, man. You know what I mean? So, and that's on purpose, yeah. you know?
Oh, yeah. Not,
you know, so I, that's just my thoughts on that.
Well, you know, and the other thing I will tell you too, that I would say, I think sums it up pretty well, is essentially what Mike Tyson used to say all the time has come to life, which is everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth. And so, you know, right now the world all had a plan, but then we got punched in the mouth, and now you're seeing who really had a plan and who didn't. And so, yeah. you know, you're right about that mob mentality stuff and people doing, you know, crazy stuff to people in cars and whatnot. And I've been in scenarios like that myself in the past. And I can tell you, it's scary. And it's, everyone talks about, I'd do this, I would do that. That's crazy. You don't know what you would do and what you might do. You have training. Everybody does. And and what happens in training is you don't rise to that. You fall to your level of training in situations like that. And but my point is not everybody has that background. And so when you hear people say things like, oh, if that was me, I would, you know, roll down the window and I'd blow them off. Everyone says that. But until you... there's nothing glorious in shooting somebody. I can tell you that it's not a beautiful thing. It's an unfortunate thing that may have to happen, but it's not what you set out to do. Anybody that says that's crazy, but you're right. I mean, it's a scary time. There's a lot of uncertainty. There's, you know, people that, they just don't know what they're doing and they may make the wrong decisions, unfortunately. But, you know, I think, and that's why I say there's, you know, this training and stuff that I was telling you about that's become so popular. What I've seen that's even more interesting is people want to know more about like situational training, simulation training, not just like go to the range and see how good they can group a bunch of shots at 25 yards out. They're really interested in like hostage situations and clearing rooms and, you know, fog of war stuff, like where they're in a smoke-filled room and they got to figure out who's a good guy and who's a bad guy and how do they get out. Figuring out how to manage a situation where they're overtaken by a mob or in the middle of a mob. You'd be surprised how many people are doing that right now and how big of that demand is. I mean, it's almost like you can't have enough of those classes. I mean, we're at beyond peak capacity with what we're doing, and we're not even doing it like on a national scale like some of my other, you know, friends and things are that, you know, have a much different setup. But doing the best we can with what we have geographically, but we're at capacity all the time. And so I'm just amazed at the demographic of person that's coming to these trainings. They're older, not who you'd expect. And they're not vigilante minded. They're literally just civic minded people that want to know what's what and how to defend themselves in all sorts of crazy scenarios. So that tells me a lot to your point about, you know, the reach of this pandemic and where it's taken people mentally, not just physically.
So Mer, I'll tell you what, that's good. So like de-escalation stuff we're talking about here, is that what you're getting at more or less, or just?
Yeah, we are. We're talking about, de-escalation. We're talking about ways for people to be able to understand how to take the high ground in a situation like that, how to understand like around them, okay, if this is what I see happening, where should I be placing myself and how should I be is the right move to just, you know, hit reverse and gun it out of there? Or is the right move to go right, go left? It's just teaching them the whole totality of the situation going into and what's around them and what's available to them in terms of an option. And more importantly, how to be calm, how to think through their action instead of being so reactionary. Right. That's the big part of that, is just the breathing and the calm, you know, just like, let's just take a second here and let's just be calm. But I think also they have a plan now in their mind because they've gone through an exercise like that. That's not something they've done before. Cause like I said, everybody has a plan until they get punched in the mouth.
Right.
So if you've never even had a plan, when you get punched in the mouth, it's even more catastrophic. So everybody's on the same page. You know, if you're in the car, your family, you've rehearsed this, you've talked about this, you've discussed it. You have stuff with you that you need in a situation like that. I don't know if you saw this video, but there's a group of people, I work with a bunch of different people, but there's one group of people I work with and they were circulating to us. You know, these people are online showing people how to buy like glass breaking devices to get into people's cars and to cut their seatbelts and get them out. That's not protesting, dude. That is terrorist, like mercenary shit when you're teaching people online how to break a window and tear someone out of a seatbelt. So that's the kind of thing that people have never thought about having to guard against. And so the game is raised, you know, it's a different ball game. And, you know, so again, there's a huge, tremendous demand for that sort of, you know, combat type, you know, scenario, you know, ways to avoid that stuff,
right?
You know, avoidance techniques is what I would call it more than anything else. And so that's a different take on the COVID thing that, you know, like you were talking about. I mean, the social media and the news is littered with all the, you know, wash your hands,
right?
Wear a mask, distance, do all that. But there's all another side of it that people are missing too.
Yeah.
You know, and starting to wake up to.
Yeah. What's interesting is where I live, I'm kind of out in the middle of nowhere. I mean, I am in a neighborhood, but it's kind of set out a little bit. There aren't too many houses out here. And my neighbors, the people that are on either my side here, and there's only, like I said, there's not too many of us out here, but we, you know, we talk often about these things, you know, awareness. And, you know, if I'm going to be gone somewhere, like for example, when I was on vacation, I have somebody watch my place. You know, I talk to my neighbors about this. You know, if this goes down, this is what we're doing. You know, this is my contact information. Here's, you know, we have this good relationship and we have this understanding about all that stuff. But like you said, you know, what's nuts is, and I think that for me, and I'll be honest with you, I get caught up personally in the whole, the propaganda stuff, right? What's going on with COVID. I get caught up in it. You know, you read these things. And like I mentioned before, strictly from a health standpoint, you know, I was having this conversation with somebody the other day, you know, cause you know, my take on masks, right? I don't wear them.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
I don't wear
same
them
as mine.
In my clinic, you know, right. In my clinic, we have procedures that are sterile procedures. My nurse practitioner, she wears them. We take the precautions, you know, we have eye washes, we have all this emergency stuff, but that's just what you do anyway. You know, that we were doing that before this stuff.
Right.
But you know, like I was saying before,
SOP, basically.
Right. Exactly. So, you know, in 2009, I know that I mentioned this already. My problem from a health standpoint is, like I said, this is where I have a hard time reconciling, is the idea of, you know, 2009, we had H1N1. There were no talks about shutdown. Matter of fact, in 2009, you might know this, Murph, the CDC told states to stop testing. Like, you're going to freak everybody the hell out. You know, stop testing.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So, and I
remember that.
I'm just thinking to myself, you know, what the heck is going on? What's different? And I have my reasons why I think that is. But to your point, I think that if you get too caught up in, like I said, that part of it, but don't understand, okay, but you have to be, you know, you have to be able to protect yourself and understand. And what you're saying about the seatbelt cutting and the window, I didn't even know that. I didn't even know that they were video showing all that stuff. That's crazy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, they're putting how-tos out there on that stuff. Just we a group that I work with, like I said, we monitor a lot of this stuff on social media, particularly, and we take that shit down. But we just caught one the other day, yesterday, where they were advertising the address of an Amazon distribution center in Kenosha, saying you shouldn't show up here. It'd be a shame if something happened to this place. So, I mean, there's that sort of stuff that's being put out there, you know, to get stuff stoked up like that. And there was, you know, another one that we were investigating this morning that showed a dude wearing a paramedic's hat, but yet he'd got shot in the arm, but what they didn't show you in the pictures was he had a pistol with him as well. So he was actually shooting at people when he got shot. And, but yet he had his own, you know, first aid kit and his paramedic hat. So you just wonder, like, who is this dude? Right. You know, so we're finding out who he is, of course, but, and getting, you know, the FBI and the others involved in stuff like this. But my point is it's a whole different world out there now in terms of what people are, propagating and what they're, you know, pushing for and advocating for and training people to do. And when you're showing people how to buy a $5 device that breaks their window and cuts their seatbelt so you can drag them out, that's, well, first of all, you better be careful you do that too. That's right. One. Second,
right.
Cause I always have my Doberman with me too. And you've seen him, he's 140 pounds. And so I always tell people, if you can take this car with him in it, it's yours.
Right.
But chances are low.
Yeah, exactly.
Because he's plan A. He's plan A. There's like five other plans. So if you can get through him, you're doing something. But anyway, my point is not everybody's in that boat. But that's the kind of stuff that's out there. So to your point, you know, you didn't know about that. A lot of people don't know about that. But, you know, we're in a different mindset of, you know, where people are thinking and how they're trying to capitalize on this whole pandemic and, you know, the sense of entitlement that comes with it and the absolute lunacy, you know, that's wrapped around it too.
Yeah.
Is just a whole nother ballgame. It really is. But you're right. I mean, it's the mask thing, you know, guy that cuts my hair and keeps my beard tight, you know, he wears his mask and his shield and his gloves and that's great, you know, and, I get it, you know, but when I go in there, I don't have a mask on because it's hard to wear a mask while you get your beard trimmed anyway.
Right. Yeah.
kind of tough, you know, but, yeah. So we've reached another world with things. Yeah.
I don't, I feel like sometimes that I've said this so many times that, but it almost seems like I have to continue to say, especially on social media, where I don't care. I quite literally do not care if people mask up. I don't care. I posted, I think a few days ago, somebody had some blue check mark, know it all, just put wear a mask. Some, I don't even know who the hell the dude was, but I'm like, so I retweeted with a comment and I said, make me, you know what I mean? And that's, and that was just kind of like,
yeah,
you know,
I saw that.
Right. And, yeah, and people were commenting, yeah, you know, and saying, you know what, you know, somebody said, well, you're an adult. Nobody's going to,
I think it was Cuomo that said, oh,
was
that
who that was? Okay. Like that would make sense. But you know, so yeah, I'm thinking to myself, but you know what, listen, yeah, I don't care literally. And I think, and then I like kind of subtweet, I said, I don't care if you wear a mask, a hazmat suit, a 1982 Michael Jackson Thriller coat. I quite literally don't care. But my general philosophy on life.
I had one of those coats too, by the way.
Hell yes, man. I had the black and white one.
Back in the day. I had the red one back in the day. I had that thing. That thing was awesome.
I wore that when it was 110 out in the summertime. But I'm not kidding. I'm
riding my bike, my BMX bike.
But my general philosophy is that you, I don't care what you do, right? Just as long as you're not infringing on mine, right? That's the bottom line. So exactly. No, I don't care if people wear masks. I don't care what they do. I have patients that wear them. I don't care one bit, but you're not going to tell me I got to wear one. It's just not going to happen. But anyway, mm-mm. So I tell you what, Murph, let's switch gears. Tell me a little bit about what's going on with Wim Hof. What you got going on there, sir?
Yeah. Yeah, man. So that's an interesting story. So I, you know, I've known about box breathing techniques forever, you know, obviously no stranger to that, believe in it. It's great. But a couple of years ago, back in 2017, I was having some really bad nerve pain that was associated to an old injury. And I just couldn't get my arms around it, you know? So I went to go see like the best neurologist in the area to find out what was going on. He's like, man, and you probably know this, but he's like, treating nerve pain is like gambling. You don't know. There's thousands of medications we could prescribe. And I'm not a medication advocate, just so you know. I hate taking medicine and I don't take any medicine. I just, nothing. Yeah. I avoid it if I can.
Yeah.
Anyway, so he said, well, let's start you with gabapentin, you know, because it's an old school drug. It's been around forever, but you know, here are the side effects. And I'm like, okay. He's like, what do you do for a living? I told him, he's like, oh, that might be a problem, you know, with the side effects. I'm like, yeah, it might be, but we'll see. So I started taking it. I was like, yeah, this is a problem. I can't deal with this. But at the same time, the pain was just unreal. It was like someone cutting you with a knife and lighting it on fire. I mean, I'd have to get out of bed. It hurt so bad. And so I'm like, I have got to figure out another way. So one of my old teammates sent me this thing. He's like, dude, I know about box breathing. You know, you and I both know, but check this out with Wim Hof, you know, this guy that goes through breathing techniques and cold water immersion. I'm like, I'll try anything. So I started doing it. And it didn't take long where I quit taking the pain medication. I focused on the breathing. I made it a part of my everyday life. I incorporated the cold water immersion into the whole thing. And within about a month, I didn't have any more nerve pain whatsoever. Awesome. But I noticed like my mental clarity was at a whole nother place. It tremendously improved jiu-jitsu. The cold water immersion was like drinking 10 cups of coffee. And I know people always joke about it on social media with the showers and stuff. And it's whatever, you know, that's why people will ask me about it. And I'll start telling them and I'll say, listen, read the books and check the science. I'm not going to advertise it to you because I'm not that kind of dude, but I'm just telling you it worked for me.
Right.
And then I started realizing like all the other benefits that were coming in behind that stuff about the brown fat versus the white fat that builds up in your body over the cold water immersion. And you essentially turn your body into an inferno. And so what he said was right. I'd get out of the cold water shower and my body would be hot. And I'm like, how can that be? It's like ice cold.
Right.
And then I got to a point where I was like, I don't even think my water's cold anymore. So I had the city come out and check the water because I'm like, this isn't even cold anymore. They're like, dude, it's registered in 48 degrees. So then I got a bunch of buddies into it. And, you know, I noticed I didn't get sick at all. I never got colds. I never got nothing. And so we would always share like which hotels had the best coldest showers that you could, you know, when we traveled and stuff. So long story short, I started sharing my story with Wim Hof and his son took notice of it and reached out and said, hey, you know, can we feature you in our upcoming book and movie? I'm like, absolutely. So awesome. Worked with their agent on that. And then I started training and I read all of his books, obviously, you know, like bought them all and not right away, but read them as I went. And, so then I started training for Mount Kilimanjaro, you know, to do his summit, you know, which you do in just shorts and boots and a ski cap. And he basically takes a group of people up the summit in under 20, about 23 hours, roughly. And it's all, it blows everything out of the water around the whole stopping at camps and decompression and all that stuff. And it, it literally talks about how you overcome, you know, the altitude sickness through the breathing. So that fascinated me right off the bat. And so I've been training for that now for a year. And so we're,
that's awesome.
We're supposed to hit that adventure next month. So it's exciting. And it was totally a life-altering practice, you know, that I got into. And it, like I said, there's detractors about it. I know it's true with anything, you right. know, but for me, all I know is it worked for me. And you know, it's become a part of my everyday life. You know, I got permission to use the club at my pool in the wintertime, you know, to swim. Nice. And they were like, "Are you crazy?" I'm like, "Not really." But so now all of a sudden I've got like a group of dudes and women that show up to do the cold water swims at the pool during the winter.
Awesome.
And I do it at the lake and stuff. So it's just, yeah. So it's become, you know, something that really has transformed, you know, everything for me in terms of mindset, in terms of what you can overcome and what you can withstand even.
Right.
So awesome. It's exciting. So I look forward to the book and the movie. It's going to be cool.
That's super cool. I'm looking forward to that too. You know, what's interesting too,
yeah, Mark,
is the idea, you know, what's the saying that the mind will quit before the body does. I remember,
exactly right.
You know,
that's what Patton always said.
Yeah,
that's...
it's crazy. And unless, you know, for me personally, there was a thing that I used to frequent years ago. It was called Camp Transformation, and a group of people, we would get together and we go to this place in Florida, and we spend a weekend kind of just pushing yourself mentally, physically. And it really is something to realize what your body is capable of doing. Excuse me. And what's really cool about that, for me at least anyway, is that when you see what you can really do, comes with that this next level of confidence. You know what I mean? And it's really something to experience.
Exactly.
Personally. But I think that, you know, on that, to that point, I guess, that, you know, maybe pushing yourself, I think that perhaps that maybe people aren't pushing themselves hard enough at points. So I get if, you know, if we're talking about somebody that has physical limitations or somebody is unhealthy, I get all that. But boy, I think to myself, I think a big thing that a lot of people are doing is they're cheating themselves in life because they're not understanding what their full potential is, really. You know what I mean? And to me, it's almost like, you see what I'm saying?
It's true. It's true. It's so true in so many things, but there's, it's just like when, you know, you go through, or when it's the way like Buds is designed that way, you know, for the SEAL team selection. That whole thing is not about, it's about the physical side, and you'll have to pass that. There's standards, no doubt, but most people can do that. Not most, but I mean, a good majority of the ones that end up in that, you know, selection. But what separates and why the class gets so small is because it is that mental side, like you said, where your mind will quit before your body, way ahead of your body. And so what they're looking for in that whole process is, how do you handle those scenarios? How does your mind hold up? And how can you withstand that stuff? Because that's what's going to matter when you get into these tough situations of real combat, is how does your mind work? How did you handle that? Could you withstand that mentally? And so that's, you know, where people lose in that scenario is they don't take it one evolution at a time. They start thinking about the entire thing all of a sudden, like the entire process. And they just have defeated themselves before they get started. Or they don't think about, all I got to do is get through this and I get to lunch. And then after, and then forget that, just stop there. You know, Right. Don't think about what happens after lunch and then all that. Just think about getting to lunch. Think about getting to this. Think about getting to the next phase. And so the whole thing is designed to just test you mentally, to see how far you can go mentally and how much you can hold on to. Because like you said, and like, you know, General Patton used to always say, the one thing to keep in mind about battle is the mind will quit way before the body.
Yeah.
And so that's such an important point in so many things right now, you know, even just in the way society works and translates. But what I was going to tell you is there's a really good program a buddy of mine runs down in Florida called Unbeatable Mind. A guy named Mark Devine, he's got a great podcast. He's written a couple of books. He's got a great blog, all that stuff. But he does that. He runs those trainings like that, where it's all about, working out your mind and understanding how far you can take yourself mentally beyond where you think you can, busting up the platitudes, essentially.
Right. Yeah. I saw that, correct me if I'm wrong, I'm a big fan of Don Shipley's too. I think he, does he have something similar, or is that just more of like a preparation for
Buzz? He does. It's a little bit of both. So his program, what's different about his is it is really designed to give people a feel for what they can expect when they get there. So he's got a lot of the, like, let's say you're in high school and you're thinking about a career in the military, and you're, more importantly, you're thinking about, hey, I want to be a SEAL. You can go to his immersion camp, I guess, for lack of better words.
Right.
Practice camp to get a feel for what it's really like to, slog through things and deal with the, physical side of what you're going to, and there's mental pieces of that they're going to get used to too. But a lot of it is around, the physical preparation and just to give people a warm up or a test run, so to speak, of what's to come. So he and his wife do good work. They've been running that for a while over in Chesapeake, Virginia is where they've got that set up.
I love them, man. I was watching their old videos where they're calling out people, the fake SEALs and all that stuff. And spend hours watching
that.
He is
classic. He is hilarious.
He is.
He handles that, the way he talks to people is just, it's so funny. And the beauty of him is he just leads it there. He doesn't even like come right out if you notice and just like blow you up. He just asks the question, right. But he already has the answer formulated. Right. It's just, he's got the question built around that. And so I think it is, it's funny. It cracks me up. People do that. He's a master.
He is, man. I love those guys. Him and his wife. I love them. His boy's a SEAL too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So I was thinking while we were chatting a moment ago about the idea of being uncomfortable. And let me kind of give you an example. Well, first let me say this. If we're talking about maybe health for a second, about recommendations and things like that, I've always kind of prided myself on that. I will never withhold recommendations based off of a judgment or whether or not I think somebody will follow through. Right. In my opinion, I'm going to give somebody the best recommendations to them. In my best opinion, to them on what is going to help them the most. I never say to myself, well, I probably shouldn't tell them to do X because they might not like it, right? So I always try to come from a place of this is what's in their best interest. You know what I mean? I never make any other judgments. Well, this morning, I had a call. I had a call scheduled. Excuse me. It was a 20-minute call with a young lady who, I had met her a couple of months ago. We did some labs, did a consultation, did some labs, and I talked to her about some things. And I did a follow-up this morning with her, and she was like, oh, I'm down 20 pounds, and there's no more bloating and all this and that stuff. She's like, but I'm still having some things going on. Long story short, this was somebody, in my opinion, excuse me, that was probably a good candidate for the carnivore diet, right? So in my mind, I know that this gal probably has never heard of the carnivore diet. So I said to her, hey, have you ever heard of the carnivore diet? And she says, no, I haven't, but I could pretty much, by the name of it, know what it is, So I said, well, in my experience, I've had people who have done really well in exactly your case. And I talked to her about it. And she said, that sounds really good to me. I'm gonna give it a shot. So, there was really no hesitancy on her end, but the idea of, and why I'm saying this, I guess, Murph, is that even with things like nutrition, lifestyle changes, I feel like, just in my experience, that a lot of people, there's hesitancy involved because there's this idea of uncomfortability, right? But some people that choose, to adopt these things, a lot of times they do really, really well and they get really fantastic results. But I think that, the idea of getting uncomfortable is uncomfortable for some people.
I would agree. And that's, I think that actually plays back a little bit to what we talked about with some of the COVID side effects, where, people have had to get comfortable being uncomfortable, because now all of a sudden, we live in a fairly outsourced society, meaning like a lot of people have gotten used to saying, hey, I've got a nanny for this, I've got a house cleaner for that, I've got a, you know, groundskeeper for this, I've got, everything's outsourced, you know? And so, right. And it may be for a lot of reasons, but a lot of times it's just they're uncomfortable doing those things, and that's cool too. But right. Now with the COVID thing, they've had to get comfortable with that uncomfortable nature of, damn, I got to clean my own house, or I've got to cut my own grass, or I've got to, you know, watch my own kids, which I think is a big one, because a lot of people have hidden, or they do hide in the blind spots of that stuff, you know, meaning like they're gone all the time, they travel, they only have to engage with their family on Saturdays and Sundays sometimes, and that that works, and that masks a lot of things. But when the music stopped and there was only so many chairs, people were like, whoa, you know, I didn't realize, you know, that it was this uncomfortable, and now I got to get comfortable with it. So it's a great point you make about that. And I think that has really transcended across a lot of the underlying, you know, issues that are happening with COVID. You know, the other point I would make is, I don't know if you saw this, but I saw a stat yesterday that like two of the most popular things right now through this pandemic have been pizza sales, have been like through the roof, hence the pepperoni shortage. And then secondly, therapists. Like, you can't get in to see one hardly to save your life because they're beyond booked. And that's for like so many. And I think therapy is a wonderful thing. I'm not discrediting it. I love when people ask for help and they get it.
Yep.
My point is, it just goes back to what we said about people having to now get comfortable with the uncomfortable. And that's just, that's going to be some ripple effects, you know, down the line with all this stuff too. But it tells you a lot, like I said, that that's where, as a society, we defaulted to like things like pizza right off the bat being like the number one thing. And then the therapy, you know, so it's just one good, one bad. You know, I don't know if pizza was the best thing to default to, but I'm, you know, like you said, more of a steak guy myself, but either way.
Yeah. Well, you mentioned about the kids too, Murph. The, you know, I have a 5-year-old, and like I said before, my schedule over the past, I've been in practice for 13 years. And the way that my clinic is run, you know, the staff that I have, the physicians, the nurses, the you know, the MAs and all this stuff, you know, my wife and I, the way that our clinic runs, we did it on purpose. You know, we knew what type of clinic that we wanted to have, and it took us years to get there. But why I'm saying this is because a lot of what I do, Murph, is online stuff. You know, I have lots of phone consultations. I do a lot of Zoom meetings and things like that with patients. I'm in my clinic. I am in my clinic during the week, but it runs the way that it does because my wife and I made it that way, made it happen that way. And I am fortunate because I can spend a lot of time with my family. But I'll tell you, even like I mentioned before, you know, we basically keep to ourselves. I go to the clinic, I'm home. I go to the academy, I see my mother, I see my sister. That's basically what I do. But I'll tell you what, it is easy. I can imagine to, like you mentioned, if you have to work from home, if you're forced to work from home and you have to be around your kids all the time, it's easy to throw a tablet in front of them and say, you know, here, let YouTube babysit you for a couple of minutes, you know, while I'm doing this and that stuff. And for me, I'll tell you what, man, I learned some crazy things. I learned some crazy things. So I'm not big on television, man. I used to be, you know. I can tell you my whole, over the past probably five years. So I'm from Pittsburgh, right? And you know, this is a sports town. You know, I used to be a Steeler fanatic, you know, Penguins fanatic, and I couldn't care less anymore, man. I really couldn't. But I'll tell you what's scary, Murph. A while back, maybe a few months ago, my kid said something to me, and I'm like, where the hell did you hear that? Right? And it wasn't, he didn't swear at me. He said, that's not fair. I told him to do something. He said, that's not fair. And I said, what? Now, those words never come out of my mouth or my wife's mouth.
Wow.
And I'm thinking, so what's funny is that even these kids, these quote unquote safe, you know, YouTube channels or things on TV, they ain't safe, man. And I've heard things and I'm like, you know what, this is it.
Yeah.
It's nuts, dude. I'm telling you, like, even TV shows, like my wife and I, we don't even, there's podcasts that we listen to. There's channels on certain YouTube people that we follow, you know, that will watch their live streams. But man, listen, the TV is a freaking propaganda box, dude. And it's coming from everywhere.
Yeah, I mean, it's a great point. I'll tell you, man, it's in one of the lines of business that I'm in, because I do a ton of consulting work. And one of the things I do have a strong practice line is I work with large multinational corporations on going through their entire financial chain, understanding where every dollar's at in the process and who they're dealing with to ensure that they're not supporting human trafficking needs or causes unknowingly. So you take a large company like, you know, Nike. They're huge. They're all over the world. They can't possibly keep track of everything that's being spent, where and who they're dealing with to ensure that that's not happening. That's where we come in and we make sure of that. And so we do that vetting and we do that heavy lifting. And to your point, you'd be shocked at some of the stuff that I see and I have seen, the way that they hide this stuff and they manipulate stuff. And that's just on a large global national corporate scale. So I also do that same sort of work, but on a individual basis, where we work with busting up those underground rings where that stuff's going on, whether it's pedophilia, whether it's human trafficking, whether it's kidnapping, you name it. And so there's some crazy, nefarious, and I will say, I'm never going to use the word smart, because they're not smart. They're crafty. They're very crafty at using things like what you just described to their advantage. Whether it be a video, whether it be an app, whether it be, it's all a gateway. And right. So, you know, people that don't think otherwise just aren't living. And your point though, you know, before all this stuff hit, everybody was on cruise control, man. And, but now people are starting to notice. And so, you know, good on you for catching that phrase that he threw out, which most people would think nothing of, or that's no big deal, but that's a canary in a coal mine right there. I mean, that was good of you to catch.
Yeah. And then, you know, we had
very good.
Yeah. And, well, I appreciate that, Murph. And, you know, we had a conversation with him. I mean, listen, he's five, but he understands. Right. And it's not just that. It wasn't just, I've personally heard things, like I've gone to some of these channels, and we're talking like channels where kids are doing like toy reviews, right? Like I go and search these things on YouTube and you know what I mean? And it's not even, it's things that I guess some would consider to be harmless, but they're just not. They're just not. And I've heard, you know, things here and there. And I told my wife, I'm like, you know what? When I was a kid growing up, I'm 44, Murph, right? So when I was a kid growing up, you know, we were outside on our bikes. We didn't have cell phones. There were no internet. And I'm thinking to myself, well, we can do that with him, right? You know, we go outside. You know, we'll score each other with a hose. We'll go in the pool, whatever. And it's just like, you know, my thing is, and some, like my mother says that I'm paranoid, but I'm here to protect my family, man. That's what I'm here for. And that's my thing. So yeah, I mean, you gotta watch out for that stuff. It's nuts. It's crazy. It's everywhere.
Well, it's wild you say that. We got a hold of a video the other day that was really disturbing, where it showed this dude, unassuming, doing a toy review. He was showing some recent stuffed animals that he had gotten and talking all about them, right? Showed his closet where he had this stuff. The very end of the video, you had to be really quick to catch this, but it was caught. It panned really quick as he was moving the camera. And in the corner behind this like trapdoor area was a little boy in his underwear gagged. What? And I'm like, this was the point of the video. It wasn't this toy review. This was a pedophilia video that he had masked as a toy review. And we caught that at the very end. It was like 2 seconds worth of footage in this whole video. And so clearly we figured, you know, we got on top, we took care of that guy, obviously. But my point is there's some really sad, weird, you know, tricky stuff out there.
It's nuts.
And anyone that doesn't think otherwise is just fooling themselves. And honestly, this happens a lot on social media. I have a lot of people that will come to me with questionable accounts, and, you know, I'll dig into it and figure it out and usually end up nuking those accounts for them. Happens a lot. And, you know, but some people choose to believe it, some people don't. But, you know, it's amazing. Like when I go through somebody's, you know, social media for them, because they've asked, and the stuff that I uncover for them, and they're just like, wow, I didn't know that was sitting out there. I'm like, yeah, it's not good, you know, because there's not everybody means well for you. And there's a lot of, you know, early warning signs that people will give you that if you don't pay attention, it's not going to end well.
Right. You know what, too, before I want to talk to you about the app, the intermittent fasting app, and the nutrition stuff with you here, too. But one quick thing about that. I was talking to somebody, a family member of mine, about what you were just mentioning. And she had said to me, you know, she's like, I know that there's these things. She's like, I want to pretend that none of this is real. I want to pretend that that's, and I could see it's just like you want to keep yourself in like this echo chamber, right? But to me, a little bit, it's almost like it's irresponsible. So for, I want to tell you, thank you for what you do, my friend. And you know, that's important stuff, dude. Important stuff.
Yeah, man, it is. It's something I'm passionate about, you know, obviously with two daughters and, you know, all of that, but just a human being in general.
Absolutely.
I'm passionate about that sort of thing.
Okay, Murph. So let's talk about the app, man. Let's get into that intermittent fasting nutrition stuff. Tell us about that.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, you know, again, I'm not a medical professional at all, but I'm a curious person by nature. And so, you know, I'd love to dig into things and I love to know how things work. So I got, you know, into the whole idea of intermittent fasting, I think probably like a lot of people have. First of all, it's really, I think back on it, it's kind of how I've always lived my life. Like when I was even younger, I really hated breakfast.
Right.
And I was always told, like everyone else, you got to have something in your stomach, you got to have some breakfast. So I would begrudgingly eat something, but never really my thing. And so I finally just started listening to my body, and that's really what it was before I knew what intermittent fasting was. And I just would go until I was ready to eat. And then I think where the difference was, though, and where I didn't understand it, was it's really important about what you break your fast with. That's right. Like, that's huge, obviously. You know, what you start off with. You can't do that and then say, my first meal is going to be a pizza and a right. You know, 2 liter Coke or something.
Right.
You know, it's just cancel out, right? Yeah. So what I did over time was learn how to tweak that to my advantage. Like, does it make sense to work out fast or does it not? Because you hear all sorts of things, and I guess it depends on what you're trying to do. But what I will tell you is, for me, when I've done it doing jiu-jitsu, I love the way that works out, you know, because yes. First of all, it's hard to go to jiu-jitsu on a full stomach. It's actually right. Dangerous, and I've done that, and that doesn't work out well. So I found that I was in a whole nother ball game doing it fasted, and then yeah, I work out doing the same thing. So I got really into the science behind it, and so I paired up with somebody that knows it way better than I do, because they're, you know, they're scientifically and medically minded, and so she's a really bright person in that space, and brings a lot of credibility to it. Not an intermittent fasting specialist at all, because, you know, I don't know what that really is, to be honest with you. I guess there is such a thing, but
right. I don't know if there is either. Yeah.
Anyway, just specialists in general. So anyway, she's done a bunch of health businesses. She's got an amazing background with that. So what I've done with her is I've reached out to the developers who have developed a couple really good apps. One in particular, you've probably heard of, Zero, yes. Like the most popular one out there, which just got another huge round of VC money, which tells me there's some stickiness there and there's something to it if they're throwing that kind of VC money at it. So I got with the developers of that app, and I've tweaked out, you know, what others have out there. And I think what we're putting together is really different, because it is more to address what I just told you about the average person that's thinking about it or wants to do it.
Yes.
So it's a good combination of things that are intuitive. There's videos, there's a way to communicate with the people that are using the app. There's a way for them to have a user community that's connected with it too, which I think is really important, to be able to have that interoperability. And then to be able to have it work with Siri, to be able to have it be on the Apple platform, iOS, and the Android, mostly the iOS. So we're doing that. And then we're also doing a lot of ability to push things to them, content to them that we think is useful based on what we're seeing other users use. So it might be things, you know how it is, like in anything, a lot of people are scared to ask questions because they feel right. dumb. Right. So I think a good way to get people comfortable and to keep them into that is to push content to them based on what we're seeing that's popular and useful within user groups in the community. So we've got a laundry list of stuff that we've gone to the developers with, and they can do it, of course, you know, like anything else, it all comes down to money. And so, but what I pushed them on was, this isn't a template. It's not what I'm looking for. You know, this is literally something that's completely different. And, you know, a different experience for what people are looking for. And so I think the idea behind it, though, like I said, is it's going to create a good amount of stickiness for people. But more importantly, I think it'll be a really good landing place for people to use for knowledge and make the barrier of entry rather small for people to get into it in a meaningful way. Because, you know, like anything else, there's tons of trackers out there. There's tons of apps, all that. So what we're trying to do is tweak that stuff and add some additional you know, way, make it more of a lifestyle
yes.
outlet for people, or lifestyle portlet, I should say, portal. And then make it also, you know, where this stuff, this content and this data that's gathered, because I think, as you know, everything, like the most important thing in anything is the data that comes from things. And so to be able to use that data with their healthcare providers together to, you know, map out their health and their, you know, their, you know, the betterment of their health and their longevity, I think is where also the key with a lot of this is. So,
absolutely.
You know, we're not going to, we'll charge like a small subscription for it, but that's only after we've proven that it's worth it. You know, so someone can try it, see what they think, opt in, opt out, you know, type model is what I'm thinking.
Got it.
Is what we're thinking, I should say. And that's, you know, the venture capital folks. I mean, I put up, you know, majority of the money to start it, but,
right.
You know, I've got some venture capital in behind it to keep it going. So we're doing that. And then we're parlaying that same thing into a white label nutrition brand, to where we're going to also have products that people can take advantage of. So whether they be protein bars, which I hesitate to use that word because it's not just that, it's very clean though. It's very, very good stuff.
Nice.
And then things like PharmaGaba, you know, which is a great supplement for people to take for sleep issues,
absolutely,
relaxation, calm, all that stuff. So, you know, doing all that thing. And so, like I said, the whole idea behind that is to get people into a lifestyle mode and a lifestyle choice. And then probably the last piece of that is we're going to put a lot of that nutritional supplement stuff through the Jiu-Jitsu studio as well too, because we've got a lot of people that want to do all of those things.
Awesome.
So we're combining all of that stuff into one, actually.
That's awesome.
Yeah. And opening up another new studio that incorporates all of that stuff.
Awesome, so, man. That's amazing. You know what, Murph, to that, the BJJ thing, I had a conversation two nights ago with a guy I train with, and he watched, I forget which documentary it was, something on Netflix where it was about fasting. I can't remember the name. I haven't seen it because he knows what I do and he knows I've been doing it for a long time. And so he calls me and says, "Hey Nick, so I've been thinking about this intermittent fasting thing." And you know, this is the guy I was telling you about earlier. His name is Chris, with the brown belt, the beast. And he's like, "So what are your thoughts
on,
you know, what do you think?" And so anyway, I had like a half hour conversation on the phone about it. And we were talking about this, which you had mentioned before about not eating. Listen, I've tried probably twice to roll when I had food in my stomach, and it, neon belly is, you know what I mean? It's
not good.
It's horrible, man. It's terrible. So I literally, in all the years I've been doing it, I've maybe twice have done it not fasted. And that just doesn't work for me, man. So anyway, a lot of these guys, especially jiu-jitsu guys, at least that I know, are getting more and more into it. And, you know, I'm in their ear sometimes about, you know, eating a certain way and intermittent fasting. And, you know, even my, as an example, my professor a few weeks ago said to me, he's like, "So, hey, Nick, I got to ask you something." He's like, "So I do really, really well during the week. I eat really well during the week. And, but the weekends," he's like, "I start getting, you know, heartburn and all this and that stuff." And I'm like, "What are you eating on the weekends?" He's like, "Well, I eat ice cream and I eat burritos and I drink tequila." He's like, "What do you think I should do?" And I'm like,
"Oh, well, there you go.
Well, there you go. But anyway, dude, that's awesome, Murph. That sounds amazing, man. That's good stuff. So what is this?
How
much can you tell us some more? I mean, what names or what release any of that stuff?
Yeah. So we've got a couple different, we haven't really completely ironed out the name on the app yet. We've got it down to three, you know, three names that we really like. And so what we're doing right now is running that through the whole copyright process to make sure that there's nothing out there that can be tied back in a bad way. And then, but I can tell you on the nutritional side, it's going to be, we're going to incorporate, it's going to be something like, Gorilla is going to be one of the names because that's my nickname. And so it's going to be Gorilla Grub or something. We're going to come up with a name that covers the gorilla aspect of it.
Nice.
So
I like it.
That's going to be that'll be one of the names. And we even have one of the bars that's developed that's an ode to that. So
nice.
But we're working through, I can tell you, we're working through Designs for Health is the company we're working through for that stuff.
Nice.
And I've got a great relationship with those folks. And so we've developed some really good stuff and we've nailed it down to the products that we like best. And I've had some of my buddies use that stuff, especially the PharmaGaba. And there's been some interesting things that have come from that PharmaGaba that you wouldn't have expected for a dude, actually.
Okay. All right.
Yeah. So it turns out that stuff, I think, might help people with their testosterone issues in some ways. Let's
awesome.
Just say that.
It makes sense to me, man.
I never would have thought that, but
yeah.
So anyway, it's been an interesting journey, but We'll have the name of the app nailed down. I've pushed the developers to get this thing released by, January, of 2021, because it's highly customized. And I had gone through the process for a while, then kind of stopped it, but then just picked it back up. So now it's full steam ahead, and I think we should have it launched by January. So I'll have the name here soon, in the next few days, actually, maybe by the end of the week. And so I'll share that with you. But but the white label stuff, it'll be something with Gorilla in the name for sure.
Awesome. Yeah, make sure you keep us posted, man, because that stuff sounds awesome to me. All right, Murph. Well, listen, my friend, I appreciate you coming on. This has been amazing to me. I'm glad that we chatted about this. And listen, I want to get you back on before we go. You can find on Twitter at MurphActual1. Is there any other social media or anything else, Murph, that you have that you want to let people know about or anything like that?
Not just yet, but I will tell you, I'm actually working with a guy of the UK that specializes in social media presence and all of that, and so he's getting ready to do an entire launch campaign for my social media. So I'll be moving into other avenues. Probably never Facebook. Nothing against it, but just never been my thing. Yep. But Instagram and a whole new Twitter revamp is what we're going to see. Nice. So I'm working with this guy on that right now too, to go along with these, the fasting thing, the Kilimanjaro stuff, and the white label stuff. But I appreciate being on, man. And you picked the right day. I was going to tell you one other thing too, is a while ago, a couple of years ago, I established this thing called Steak Club. So once a month I get together with my buddies and we go to a steakhouse and we have bourbon and steak and we try a different bourbon and all of that. Nice. And then it's also morphed into a gun club too, where we go out to the range and shoot. So tonight's Steak Club. So you couldn't have picked a better night to have this podcast.
There you go. Awesome, man. I love it.
Perfect day for it.
So I'll tell you what, I'm going to go. I always have bourbon at my house. So I'll make sure that I have one with you guys tonight as well.
That's the way to go, man. There's never a bad time for bourbon. That's so true. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, Murph. So listen, I'm gonna wrap up here. Just hang tight for a second, and I'll chat with you off air here. So guys, listen, this was at Murph again at Twitter at MurphActual1. Murph, thanks so much for coming on, sir. And I will see you on Twitter. Hang tight.
Sounds good, brother.
All right, brother.